Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Today on Off Talkle Empire, we have observed a lot of commercials coming out suggesting that the bad times are over while the pandemic continues to rage and we approach 800,000. But hey, Turkey, just let's lean in over your shoulder here. If whoever's cooking isn't educated in appropriate brining, maybe just make sure the gravy boat gets situated in front of you and go ahead and drain the whole thing onto your plate. Go ahead and stick your head in the gravy till you drown, actually. Then you won't have to watch the Lions play the Bears this week on Off Tackle Empire.
Your source for Big Ten talk, it's Off Tackle Empire.
Welcome to Off Tackle Empire, the Big Ten football podcast that would really like you to, just let me squeeze by you here and grab the ranch and dump it all over my turkey this week.
Oh, God.
I'm just gonna crack a wind fight Red Rooster of the Week here. I actually have nothing for this. This is just a smooth berry blast.
I was gonna say it's a whole bottle of ranch that you're cracking. You're gonna drink it right from the bottle, huh?
No. I don't have any of that beer, but anyway, I'm Steve Braun. I'm Thumpasaurus. I'm Andy Kaczewski, and the first thing we got to talk about is, boy, did a lot of things happen outside the Big Ten this week. I mean, the Big Ten was actually fairly boring. Nothing particularly interesting happened. A lot of things kind of according to script. But outside of football, Dan Mullins had an incredible journey from within a field goal of downing Alabama to being fired before the season's end.
Yeah, it's not quite as extreme of a swing as we had with Ed Orgeron, but there's also like, did we ever hear anything about Dan Mullen being so weird or it like intolerable that he had to be fired? Like,
you mean, did we ever hear anything where he was accused of humping a shark
or faking death threats? Yeah, no, I don't. There was nothing like that. And it's
trying to fuck booster wives or I'm sorry. Administration wives or punching your player on TV.
Well, depending on who the booster is, it could be better or worse, but it's just, I mean, some of these big SEC jobs they're starting to feel like NBA gigs where it's never mind having consecutive bad years or even a bad entire season. Like if you have a bad month, they will fire you now.
No, it's like, you remember when, what was it? Dwayne Casey that got coach of the year and then got fired after losing a playoff series.
Yeah. But that was because the Raptors had a roster good enough to win an NBA title, and they did indeed win the title the next year.
Yeah, I mean, so that's not necessarily the fairest example, but still, that's just goes to show you the it makes it a fair comparison, though, that's just kind of the temperature.
Yeah, I just like, I understand these jobs are gonna pay a lot of money, and you've got big time atmospheres, great resources, prime access to great recruiting spots, especially Florida. But I can't help but wonder, like, doesn't this turn off some coaches who, like, for example, if you're a Luke Fickell, I'm not saying that you stay at Cincinnati forever, but if you're offered a job at a place like an LSU or a Florida, you know perfectly well, if you don't win a national title within 3, maybe 4 years, they're firing you. And even if you do, you might still get fired. Whereas if he makes the playoff field at Cincinnati this year, which is much more possible after this week, he's there for life. They'll never.
Well, it's not so much not winning a national title. It's you got to win double digit games every single year.
Yeah, it's right. I mean, these bigger ones. It's
Kirby Smart has survived not winning a national title yet. And again, yeah, the dude who's assembled a defense that's given up like 70 points this year. Yeah, just barely managed to survive through these 11-win seasons.
Right. And now, like, I mean, like, I just can't, like, is that really going to be the cap? Or, like, if Georgia doesn't win the national title, are they going to fire Smart? Like, is that where this goes next?
And well, look, like, the amount of online posting that you've seen clamoring to fire this guy would shock you. That you can find.
I don't think it would, because I, like, really, if you look in the right places online, you can find a, I mean, how many people are here to QAnon, honestly? Like, that it would not, I don't think it would surprise me.
That's fair.
There's a difference.
Well, there were all those people that gathered to see the return of JFK Jr. in Dallas the other week.
Did that happen yet, or are they still out there waiting? I know there were some people who were like,
he return? No. No, he did not.
Okay.
Well, that hasn't happened yet.
I don't watch a whole lot of the news anymore, I'll be honest with you. I mostly get snippets here and there, and, you know, once in a while tune into, Good Morning America or whatever. But, okay, so that did not happen. But so, I guess what I'm saying is, no, I'm not surprised by that, but that doesn't mean that it's not still, like, objectively crazy to think about. And so, consider, for example, how difficult it is to be in a coaching search this year. For example, I think Virginia Tech was probably pretty well justified to fire Justin Fuente. Right. I mean, that's something that we've kind of been like for a couple of years now. Well, aren't they going to pull the trigger?
Are they going to do it? Or are they going to not? Yeah.
Yeah. And so they've
been
did.
Beating around that bush.
But now, depending on what you think of different factors, Virginia Tech is at best the fourth best option in the coaching pool this year. If you go by the traditional factors, because you've got USC, probably the best job, in my opinion. And then LSU, Florida, I don't know. I mean, you potato, potato, really. They're both top-tier SEC schools, great talent access, great winning history.
Well, look, in order to bring up what I think will be a fourth one there, I'd have to skip ahead. So before I do that, I want to mention that for whatever reason, last year when they beat Missouri, Florida coach Dan Mullen came out to a press conference in a Darth Vader costume. I don't remember why he did that, but anyway – Eli Drinkwitz, the Mizzou head coach, came out with a lightsaber in a press conference this time.
Of course, the guy named Eli could not let a nerd-themed slight go unanswered when he had the opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Dan Mullen, I mean, there's, of course, you know, the weird thing is there's going to be all these things that now people are going to say, like, oh, these were warning signs, but Dan Mullen was just a meathead, and there are plenty of successful meathead coaches.
Especially you're talking about the SEC.
What? There was the thing where, what was it that he blamed for losing to Texas A&M last year?
Oh, I don't know. I don't keep track of what those guys say.
But I remember thinking this was incredible, though. But, I mean, yeah, just had all this real, real big meathead energy. And these are the kind of things that once a guy fails and gets fired, you go, oh, man, you know, how could you not, you know, see this coming? But it's like, how many successful coaches have that kind of shit happen?
Yeah, well, of course, you know, the funny thing is, especially in terms of these SEC schools. So what's going to happen now is, so you've got so far Florida and LSU looking for new head coaches. But keep in mind, like, Dan Mullen and Ed Orgeron did not get to those places by being completely incompetent buffoons. Like,
yeah,
in their own ways, they both have things that they bring to the table. And of course, you know what's going to happen now is Nick Saban just assimilates them into his Borg mind of coaching assistants.
Okay, so when they lost to Texas A&M, he blamed the fact that he couldn't have a full crowd because of COVID restrictions last year.
Oh, that's right.
That's what happened. That's why he lost.
To Texas A&M, yeah.
To Texas A&M.
But, you know, so Orgeron and Mullen will now do their rehab stint at Passages Tuscaloosa.
No, it was because Texas A&M had so many fans at the game and he couldn't have fans at his home games. That's why he lost on the road.
Oh, because the team couldn't be prepared for it.
What it was like. God, yeah. Okay. You see why I remember that? Because it was really, really stupid, even for a college football head coach.
Yeah. Well, but regardless, like, Florida's administration didn't have any problem with that. Like, he didn't get in trouble.
Of course not.
But look, I mean, even if there are no more major openings this cycle, and you know there will be, you're already looking at a year where the following schools have to find new head coaches: USC, Florida, LSU, Washington, Virginia Tech, and TCU. And if you're looking at me like, why are you putting TCU on
Texas
that list?
Texas Tech.
They already got a new coach, though.
Oh, they did, didn't they? Okay, yeah, well, that's okay because you also got to consider that Texas is 4-7 and has lost 6 in a row for the first time since 1956.
Yeah, and also, while we're speaking of Texas, we'll just jog down to this part. They now need a home win over Kansas State next week to avoid a 4-8 campaign as they're gear up for a move to the SEC.
They're 2-6 in conference play.
I mean, even in the state of Texas, has there ever been a better example of an administration knowingly trading its constituents' best interests and happiness for cold, hard cash?
I mean, even for Texas, that's pretty bad.
Even for Texas, like, that's some Texas power grid shit. And the other fun thing of that is, if Texas loses and Kansas wins, Texas is dead last in the Big 12 this year. In their final year in the conference, they put the death blow in. I mean, that's just like, would that not be poetic justice? So anyway, you know, maybe keep an eye on that if you're looking for games next
week.
Which
sucks because Kansas came so close to actually doing it too, beating TCU.
Yeah.
That would have actually put Texas right in last place.
Yeah. But anyway.
They really did. It was a 3-point margin. But yeah, Texas, you know, West Virginia, I mean, it was not a surprising loss. Certainly nothing like the losing to Kansas, but it was still the 6th straight loss. And at the beginning of this losing streak, they had led Oklahoma by 3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
And everything's been terrible since then.
I don't know that it's a foregone conclusion that Sarkisian gets the Steve Wilkes treatment, but you have a relationship with somebody who's fairly well connected. And I can't imagine there's many people in the Texas fan base who think this is going to work anymore.
No, and look, as he's cruising to what seems like an inevitable victory in our college football fantasy league here, what he tells me about Texas football is checked out, not even watching. Just yeah, incredible to me. This is a guy that follows recruiting for teams that aren't his.
Yeah. Which
they're
again,
not even
by
watching
the way,
their games anymore.
Which, by the way, I still think should be the equivalent of performance-enhancing drugs and should lead to his expulsion from the league. So that maybe somebody else has a chance. But anyway.
I still have a chance. I'm only 25 points out.
Oh, it's cute that you think that. He's
good. Well,
he's
for a second there, I thought they did, in fact, fire Herm Edwards, which they haven't done yet, but I thought they would have fired him for getting poor performance out of Rashad White last night against Oregon State.
Yeah, man, I saw that he's like, it seems that Arizona State's fans have pretty well turned against him too. And I looked, I'm like, they're 7-4. And I'm like,
God, I went into that game last night, 35 points out of the lead with a stud running back against one of the worst defenses of the Pac-12. He got 11 points.
I don't think you're in a position to complain after the way your Lou Nichols picks have worked out the last.
Well, season. And Malik Cunningham.
And then you got 69 actual.
Yeah, Malik Cunningham blew my mind 69 quiet times.
You. Quiet you.
Anyway.
So to put a ball on this coaching search thing, at some point, I wonder if athletic directors who are on the fence about their coach kind of shy away from firing them in this cycle because, I mean, forget your top option. You might not get your 7th best choice if you're further down the pecking order. That's why, you know, we mentioned Texas Tech went out and aggressively found the guy that they want, a guy who's connected with Texas high school football, an assistant at Baylor, and they locked him up immediately. Like, they're like, we can't let this, because there's a chance we're not going to get this guy.
Let's see, Arizona State thing, by the way, just to mention that, there's apparently also some kind of NCAA investigation going on there, which is also kind of a thing. And like, recruiting has cratered kind of as a result of both of those things. So it's kind of more of a holistic thing than, oh, shit, he's 7-4 this year. Ah!
All right, fair enough. Again, like, it's a Pac-12 team. But nobody talks about them. I have no idea. Like, of course, so Clay Helton has his new job at Georgia Southern, yes. And then the other school that already locked up its next coach would be UConn, which got Jim Mora Jr. to come to Stores.
There's just no way that, like, we have a small audience, and I don't think a single one of them outside of us would get it if I tried to do the Jim Hermaeus Mora bit that we talked about.
No, that's getting very, that's a lot. Even
please somebody tell me if I'm wrong.
even for the people who listen to us, that's a lot. So, yeah, I mean, the flip side of this is that if you are an even vaguely desirable coach, like, I don't know if maybe the shine has come off of Matt Campbell a little bit, but presumably he still gets an offer from one of these schools. Or if you're a Billy Napier, for example, at Louisiana, you are going to get paid. And the other thing is, if you're a coach like Mel Tucker or James Franklin, and you can even plausibly say, yeah, you know, I'm probably going to get offers from these other schools, you are also going to get paid. Tucker is proof of that. I think Penn State has the, I think Pennsylvania has a state law where they don't have to disclose that salary. You assume James Franklin is probably making $6.5-7 million already.
Well, shit. I mean, you know, Brett Bielema has Illinois fans feeling a little bit of hope. Well, that's to stop him from going right into the 80s in the office and be like, well, looking forward to hopping on the wife, hopping on the plane to go to Baton Rouge.
My dog is just licking the couch armrest right now. I think he's kind of trying to lick his paw, but it's like 70% couch.
I assume that's your white dog.
Yeah, and he's supposed to be the smart one.
My white dog, who is also the smart one, but is also very dumb about being smart, has subsided. She's given up on trying to woof her way out of the room.
He's apparently been at it for a while. It's that armrest is soaked. R2, you are such a peculiar creature. Yeah, you. Okay. So let's try to keep this train moving a little bit so we don't end up with a two-hour runtime. So first question about last week's games. Did Cincinnati win by enough to make Gary Barta and friends see the value in letting a huge portion of the sports supporters and followers think that their team could theoretically win a title despite not being in a power conference? No, you idiots. They're going to find a way to leave Cincinnati out no matter what happens.
And look, what I was watching at some point last night, I found that there was just, I was flipping through the channels looking for a game. And I found that there was a Muggsy Bogues documentary on NBA TV. And I was like, shit, I got to watch that. But then I recorded it. And I watched it this morning. And that just made me think, like, if Gary Barta were the NBA commissioner, he would have made Muggsy Bogues ineligible just to rob hope from short people. Right.
We don't want short people to get the idea that they too could play basketball.
It was just kind of a standard fare documentary, nothing like particularly like insightful or anything, but it consisted of like about an hour of Muggsy Bogues highlights, which are about the best highlights in the goddamn world to watch. Never get sick of watching Muggsy Bogues highlights. That guy is so cool.
Spud Webs are mostly in low def or black and white. So yeah, you may as well.
Spud Webb had a good 5 inches on Muggsy.
Elsewhere in the country, Bryce Young had a big enough performance that I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that CJ Stroud won the Heisman by just bombing Michigan State. So that was interesting. You know, they still were in a close game with Arkansas, though, a team that's continued to fight despite, I mean, again, just a brutal schedule.
Arkansas, they had a brilliant trick play to keep them in this one as they maintain, you know, just striking distance, one score the whole time. And then, you know, Alabama just, you know, casually flicks one downfield to Jameson Williams, and that's it.
Right. The cast off from Ohio State, who wasn't good enough to play, who was Alabama's stud receiver. look at plucky little Clemson, by the way, getting a big upset win over ACC powerhouse Wake Forest.
Hey, Pitt locked up the conferential division.
Yeah,
hey, I'll tell you what, you know who's not going to win the Heisman but really deserves a lot more respect is Kenny Pickett.
Yeah, nobody even mentions him as a candidate.
I did see him mentioned as a candidate on one of these broadcasts. They also mentioned Kenneth Walker, which is fair. You know who well nobody's talking about though for really any awards is besides conference play of the year is Bailey Zappe of Western Kentucky.
I think the finalists are mostly out, so maybe it's just he's not gonna get. I would think they'd at least give him a finalist nomination for the O'Brien, right?
You'd hope. I mean, the dude's probably thrown more passes than anybody in the country, but like, again, because I play fantasy all the time, got some unique insights into, you know, maybe some of the more deserving Heisman dudes. For the fantasy players out there, the year Lamar Jackson won the Heisman, dude averaged like 44 fantasy points a game. That's fucking ridiculous. Well, Bailey Zappe averages about 38 and a half. It's all yeah, and throwing.
And that's partially, yeah, because he doesn't run at all.
Nor do they as a team.
I think Stearns is a finalist for the Biletnikoff, so that's
good. Semi-finalist. Yeah, that's their leading receiver. But there really is no clear winner this year as far as, like, if you're looking, because it's got to be a Power 5 guy, right? It has to be.
It's, you know, Stroud or Young. I don't think there's any question that one of those guys is going to end up winning.
But I'm talking about from the perspective of, like, you know, who I think would really deserve to win it as a guy who looks at the stats all the time.
Oh, no, there are plenty of deserving players. Yeah, I'm just not like it's yeah. going to come down to
not like, quarterback like there Ohio was,
State or quarterback Alabama.
That's yeah, like the Cam Newton year was inarguable. Lamar Jackson year was inarguable. The Mark Ingram year, it was clearly Toby Gerhardt. There's no debate about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, in those days, Stanford might as well have been Western Kentucky.
Yeah, basically. So then in the meantime, Dorian Thompson-Robinson got an unsportsmanlike for signing autographs after a touchdown.
Yeah, I don't screw the refs. That's awesome. That's
like,
I want that.
Look, whatever. Give him the penalty, but at least say 15 yards for being a goddamn PIMP.
Yeah, and then another result of some interest, Oklahoma State beat Texas Tech in shutout fashion, which means I believe, regardless of what happens next week, we are assured of back-to-back bedlams. Is that true?
I don't know, because I don't see how Baylor could possibly be out of it. I actually do have the standings up for all the leagues, because I figured that we were going to at some point talk about this. Oh, shit. Yeah, Baylor is 6-2.
Yeah. And didn't OK State beat them head-to-head?
I think so. I mean, someone must have been. Oh, yep. They lost to Oak State and TCU.
Yeah, that was, don't you remember? That was the Jerry Kill game.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, how could I forget?
Where he inserted his tendrils into the ventilation. Yep. So, yeah, that as far as I understand the way that their conference works, means that, yeah, Oklahoma State and Oklahoma play in back-to-back weeks.
Yeah, R2 is not happy about that. He thinks that's some bullshit right there.
Presumably there's a UPS truck two blocks over or something that he's decided needs to bark at.
You know, I'll tell you what, Moon really doesn't care about mail. She's fine with Amazon and FedEx and the U.S. mail she particularly seems to like. But, boy, she hates UPS. He just wants to woof at the hell out of some UPS.
Yeah, well, presumably she's a union buster then. So sorry, man, your dog's a Pinkerton. all right. We've been at this quite a while. We haven't even started talking about this week's games. So we'll get into it. And fortunately, we have a little bit of a breakup in that for the first time in several weeks, we have a Friday game. That would be the Black Friday American Hero Troop Cops Farmers game, brought to you by State Farm All Bureau. Nebraska and Iowa is what we're talking about, if we aren't clear. I have low-key come to enjoy watching this game because it's a very faithful representation of Thanksgiving, in that the rest of us in the Slack and in the college football world are just sort of sitting back and observing as there's a pitched, hate-laced argument between the Nebraska people and the Iowa people about who's actually living rent-free in the other's head and so forth. Or whatever it is they argue about. They're always arguing about something.
The massive rampant overuse of rent-free reminds me of just this two-panel comic I saw where it's like, it depicts a dude pissing his pants and a whole crowd of people just laughing at him. And the next panel just has him thinking in his head, rent-free.
Yeah, I just don't understand how that became the go-to deflection for so many people, where it's like, oh, look, other people are talking about a bad or dumb thing I did or criticizing me. Like, I don't know. Because it's the maturation of narcissism where it's like, people are thinking about me.
I still even if it's
laughing at my face.
So anyway, how do you think this game gets to 27-24? Do you think Iowa kicks nine field goals?
Yeah, nine field goals to, let's see.
Three touchdowns and two-point conversions.
No, I'm going to say, yeah, nine field goals for Iowa. Nebraska scores three touchdowns but misses all three extra points. but then kicks two field goals.
Or do they score three safeties?
I don't think that's quite a lot, even for a game involving Iowa. No, I think I'm going to stick with my projection there.
How about two touchdowns, a third touchdown with an extra point, and then a safety?
Two touchdowns, extra point.
It just feels like a safety's got to come into this equation somehow.
I don't know that it does, because really, like, Nebraska's offense is not that bad, honestly.
Yeah, but Iowa's is.
But really, it's gotten somewhat better since Padilla took over. Like, it's not what it was in October for a few weeks there, where they're not going to crack 200 total yards. Like, they're better than that.
That's fair enough.
You know, anyway,
we're talking about a Nebraska game here. We know what's going to happen.
Yeah, lots of ways to get to a three-point Iowa win, which is, it feels like the one true outcome in this game. So, yeah, of course, the funny thing is, if Iowa does win this game, they then have to root for Minnesota to give them the division by beating Wisconsin.
Oh, boy.
A fate truly worse than death. But you know what? I guess when you've won Flight of Rosedale 7 straight years, you can go ahead and say, yeah, why don't you slacking shits do something useful without, you know, losing too much sleep over it.
So then, you know, what's weird is that I keep hearing all these advertisements where it's like, oh, there's games, and then there's the game. The most storied rivalry in college football kicks off on Saturday, and I'm like, we already played Illinois. Are we doing it again? But we're talking about the other most storied rivalry in college football, and that is the Land-Grant Trophy.
Yeah, and so we're going a little bit out of chronological order here because the kick times had not been posted when I put this together. But yeah, it really – I think this game comes down to whether Sean Clifford plays or not. If he plays, I think Penn State ultimately wins. If he doesn't, I think Penn State's offense struggles enough even against a very vulnerable MSU pass defense that I think the Spartans win.
Because that's the problem, right, is that Penn State can't run the ball, but neither could Purdue.
Right, and so and it's
– Ohio State chose not to in order to rub your nose in it a little more.
Yeah, well, and like I said, I think really
– it was about Heisman Pub.
I think so.
If they'd played Henderson earlier, they would have run the ball more on you guys because it's like, okay, that's the guy people are talking about. Let's get him more stats. They're a bored god playing video games at this point where it's like, okay, no, look, why the hell are they still not have my guy in number one in the Heisman thing? I'm just going to lower the difficulty here, and I'm just going to toss like touchdown after touchdown until they vote my guy number one.
Yeah, pretty much. Other than that, I'm considering going to this game. It's a 3:30 kick. The tickets got a lot cheaper after the Ohio State game last week.
Yeah, I bet.
And this last week of the game, it's usually pretty easy to get good seats because people always realize, oh, I don't want to fucking go on Thanksgiving weekend. So, all of our wishes that they would make this the permanent fixture at the end of the season, because that bowling trophy ass Land Grant is truly the most worthy thing.
They're gonna bring the trophy. They actually do like pass the trophy though, right? Or is that retired?
No, I believe they pass it. It takes like a moving crew and a couple of hand trolleys to get it out there, but yeah, they still transfer it. I do not think Franklin cares for it much.
Well, if I remember correctly, Perlis made that shit in his hobby room, right?
Yeah, after he retired, he took up woodworking, and this is what we got out of it. And of course, it's still one of the more interesting careers. I mean, had a mostly successful tenure, but ended up leaving real trouble with the NCAA for his successor. Nothing that was honestly all that bad. But again, we're talking about like pre-2000 Big Ten. So if you're not Michigan or Ohio State, you don't get to cheat. And then fractured the relationship between the athletic department and the board of trustees so badly that they ended up letting Nick Saban go because they didn't want, I mean, they just, they disliked the way that Perlis handled asking for raises. and then later became a trustee himself and designed a trophy the football team plays for. Just quite a journey. And those, like, I'm only hitting the high points. There's a lot of other stuff in there. Man, weird. But yeah, it's fitting that this is one of the weird, like, amongst all the other trophies, like, obviously we're never going to displace Michigan, Ohio State at the end of the season. I would happily settle for Penn State. They don't have anybody else to play either. Keep saying unrivaled if you want. I don't give a shit. You don't have to call us a rival. Let's just play for this funny.
Not a rival.
Right. That's the thing that you chant at, in unison, thousands of people at once, to convince the other team that, no, actually, we don't care that we're
red free.
Very convincing. So that's pew, pew, pew. Now let's move on to chop, chop, chop. And no, I'm not talking about a Michigan State Rutgers rematch. Rather, the Paul Bunyan's axe. Leading receiver for the season in this matchup between Wisconsin and Minnesota is Danny Davis, with a line of 27 receptions, 418 yards, 2 touchdowns. So that's like a mediocre couple of games for Garrett Wilson or Chris Olave or David Bell. Like,
or that's, you know, had, say, Wilson been the guy receiving the most Heisman press, that's what he would have scored against Michigan State, right?
Sigh. yeah, but it, I mean, you ask, all right, well, these are two teams that are pretty similar on paper in that they are very run-heavy offenses, pretty good defenses. How's this end up going? Well, Wisconsin wins, because Wisconsin almost always wins this game, and they're a way better team. Their passing game has actually shaped up a little bit now that they're realizing that their tight end is actually their only functional weapon. They've found their feature back in Braylon Allen. The offensive line has played a lot better recently.
And I'll tell you what, if Graham Mertz throws a touchdown, he should really just – they should find some way to take him out of the game, like a pitcher or something, because he will finally have more touchdowns than picks. He's even at 9 now. But anyway, yeah. Wisconsin's defense, you were saying, it's just rolling.
Yeah, they're by far – and so we mentioned in the recap, for example, that in the Penn State-Rutgers game, Penn State's quarterback was able to settle in because there was no game pressure on him. I don't expect there to be much game pressure on Wisconsin, because their defense is far and away the best unit in this game. I think this is a game where Minnesota is really going to struggle to run the ball. And on those occasions when their run game has been controlled, this offense does that. It's pretty unusual because they're so effective running the ball that they can usually get something out of it. But yeah, I picture Minnesota having a really hard time establishing their ball control, high TOP kind of offense that they've really come to rely on.
So here are the points allowed by Wisconsin's defense in conference play since the end of that real big meltdown they had in their first three, you know, their first four games, right? 0 against Illinois, 13 against Purdue, one of the more prolific offenses in the league, 7 against Iowa, 3 against Rutgers, 7 against Northwestern, and 28 against Nebraska, but that's only because Wisconsin scored 35. Had Wisconsin scored 7, Nebraska would have scored 0. Had they scored 14, Nebraska would have scored 7.
Right. So that's the point that we're getting at here, when I don't see any other reasonable outcome to expect but that Wisconsin ends up winning. Yeah, I could see a reasonably close game. The line here is Wisconsin -6.5, even though the game is in Minnesota. I think they probably covered that, but narrowly.
This game's going to be about turnovers, though.
Yeah, I did not mention this, but MSU is giving 1.5 at home.
Ooh.
To Penn State.
But this X game is going to be about turnovers and special teams. Minnesota's special teams have been a liability this year.
Yeah, and as far as actual action goes back and forth, the over-under on the Paul Bunyan's axe is 39. So do that what you will.
But yeah, it's whatever bank owns TCF Now Stadium. So Wisconsin getting 6.5 there is, kind of says that this is maybe a 10-point game on a neutral field. But I think whatever the score is, it's definitely going to be low. And I think Wisconsin's going to win by a couple of scores.
Yep, probably fair enough. Okay, so let's get you. You've been long. Have you augured ill of this game we're about to talk about, which is hat.
I don't watch this game anymore, and I probably never will again. I'm going to be in Traverse City doing many fun things at places that hopefully won't have TVs.
Well, if there's a TV,
it'll be on. There's not going to be this game on it. Yeah, that's true.
Real.
Okay, well then let's hope for shitty Wi-Fi here.
So, talk me out of playing Evan Hull and JMC. Like, convince me.
No, the only thing is that if Andrew Marty doesn't delegate, right, that's the whole deal. Is if he keeps it instead, because you know, I don't know what the status of Calvin Avery or Rod Perry are going to be on the D line, but if we start Virtus Brown, who's 350 pounds. I just see, you know, Marty just casually like throwing him like 10 yards to the side, like Reggie White in that Super Bowl. No, I mean, I think that the only way that Illinois makes this respectable is by hitting on both of their scripted drives and then
holding on for dear life.
Yeah, because that's kind of the only, Northwestern's offense is shitty, but they're balanced. They're balanced as far as their ability to pass or run the ball. They're shitty at both, but there's not one that they do that's much worse than the other. That's particularly terrible. Minnesota terrible at passing the ball this year. Penn State terrible at running it. Rutgers shitty but balanced. Iowa shitty but balanced. And those two teams beat Illinois. Northwestern's actually better than both of those teams on offense, but that's kind of my concern. I know that we're going to get the best game that these guys are capable of in, you know, probably in their entire lives. And I frankly don't think there's any way that we lose this game by any less than 4 touchdowns.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I want to make fun of you now because that's objectively preposterous, but I also know how this series has gone recently, so I can't.
You know, I had an entire song recorded before the 2019 game. I'll never get. I deleted the masters.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I mean, of course, the other thing is the last time I spoke out against your pessimistic prediction was before the UTSA game, so I'm just not going to do it again. But that being said, you made similarly sourpuss predictions before Penn State as well. So it's not a foregone conclusion.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, it is. I mean, the fact of the matter is the last time we had a situation where like we were feeling like not terrible about ourselves, like we still maybe wanted to someday watch another Illinois game and Northwestern was struggling, it led to what I think is just behind the 2009 Missouri loss in worst Illinois losses ever for me. Like not ever, but that I've seen. So I'm just going to not get burned on that stove again. Not watching this. Fuck this. We're probably going to lose badly. Just terribly. Okay, now, so here's two more reasons.
For purposes of the historical record, I might have this game on if I don't end up going to MSU's because you're also in the afternoon slot. So if I end up at home, I could surf between them. Is there a point at which you want me to alert you if there's a positive game script?
I don't know. It's my wife's birthday, too. I don't want to. You know, I don't want to ruin that.
You don't
want to
watch your team beat Illinois on your wife's or beat Northwestern on your wife's birthday?
No, I don't want to watch Illinois beat Illinois. If you need any more convincing, consider the following 2 points. If Northwestern wins this, it will tie the all-time series between the two. In other words, Illinois can avoid tying an all-time series with one of the historically worst teams in college football. Mm-hmm. No fucking way do they avoid that. Okay. And also, if Illinois wins this game and goes 5-7 and maybe has a chance to bowl in Detroit or something by APR or whatever, Illinois fans will go into the offseason with a hope that has rarely been felt in Champaign. No way do we not piss all of that away by just absolutely pissing down our leg and getting blown the fuck out at home. No way we don't do that. Just none. Well,
here's the only thing I would say to counter that, which is all that stuff gets wiped off the table the same way if you lose on a field goal as time expires. You don't have to get blown out for those things to be off the table.
Well, I mean, the bowl thing, yeah. But
aren't you glad that we became friends and we've been doing this podcast? It's for moments like that, right? That you like to make and maintain friendships.
Yeah. No, I mean, even if we lose narrowly in this one, they'll still be like, okay, this might happen, right? But, you know, it's like in 2019 where it's like, even though we kind of knew that it was a bit of a luck that got that 4-game win streak, then we competed at Iowa. They're thinking, okay, 2020 might be a year in which we don't suck. And then we got our absolute shit pushed in by Northwestern. And it was like, oh, okay. No, we're just going to suck forever, and Lovey has no business coaching here anymore. That was entirely luck that got us through the bowl game, and that's what ended up being the correct take. So I feel like Northwestern will put us in a similar position this time, because why would they not?
I guess, man. I mean, I still know how you can make long-term conclusions about Bielema in year one.
I mean, I certainly can't. It's just that... the Mel Tucker thing has really proven to me shitty program gravity and shitty program inertia, because I guarantee you that if, like, I don't know, if fucking Oregon State or whatever had hired him in the same time frame, they would not be anywhere near as good.
No, probably not.
Bielema could very well end up being good, and we could still suck, like, for years.
If he's actually good, you're not going to suck for that long. But anyway, we got to keep this moving here. So we moved on. Again, we've got pew, 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 chop, 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 hat, hat, hat. Now, clink, clink, clink is the best thing that I came up with for the bucket. This might be the most lopsided result in this
bucket,
series.
Bucket, bucket, bucket.
In a long time. Yeah, buck, buck, buck. Indiana is a complete disaster on offense right now. Their coaching staff is not pushing any of the right buttons on that side of the ball. And they plainly have no idea how to get good quarterback production out of Donovan McCulley. Meanwhile, Purdue's offense is humming in the hands of a veteran quarterback with a deep array of weapons who I think are finally all more or less healthy. I don't remember seeing Payne Durham in the game last week, so I don't know if he's back or not. But they have Bell. They have Milton Wright. The running game has gotten better since Doru and Horvath have both gotten healthy. There's no reason to think that Purdue won't win this game and win comfortably. And the line here reflects that. I wonder how long it's been since there was a double-digit spread in this game, but Purdue is favored by 15 at home, according to the Vegas line.
Honestly, I might take them to cover that, because
yeah, I might.
Indiana seems so completely dead in the water that I feel like, and granted, if they were going to show up for a game, it would be this one, but it's just there have been so few signs of life in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. I think really as far as a margin goes, if he has the choice, does Jeff Brohm choose to push for a blowout? I don't know. They ended up with an impressive margin against Ohio State when they had that chance a few years ago, but I don't know. Like, I don't really have a read on him that way.
Well, if Indiana can stop the run, then he might have no choice but to keep throwing.
Yeah,
well, not stop the run, contain the run, because Purdue's not a great running team, and Indiana's been known to occasionally slow down better running attacks. So the game script might just dictate that they keep throwing.
Yeah, that's true. Carrying on here, there is no onomatopoeia for the sound of indifference.
Of silence.
Well, indifference, though. And that's what I've got in the Maryland-Rutgers game, where other than Michigan and Ohio State, quite possibly the highest stakes when you consider the both teams' perspective here. Because, you know, think about what we talked about so far. So in the Land-Grant Trophy, Michigan State with a win is in really good position for New Year's Six game. That's, you know, something to play for. Penn State, there's nothing either way. Like, it doesn't matter. Paul Bunyan's axe, Wisconsin. If they win, they win the West, go to Indianapolis. That's a big thing.
Do you want to send James Franklin out with a win as he ditches you before the bowl game, right?
You speak like, are you hearing things that I'm not about that actually happening?
No, I'm not. I'm just, you know, just that's the kind of thing that's never a threat for my school. So I'm going to, you know, wave it in the face of everybody else.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's, if that's how you got to get your jollies, like, do whatever you got to do. I don't think it materially harms their long-term prospects either way.
Nah.
In the Lowell hat game, I guess there's not really much for either team to play for except hating the other.
Illinois could still get a bowl game if they get this. I mean, apparently they are very high up on the list of APR, and apparently there are enough bowl ties. And yeah, not
good for you for playing.
It could actually happen.
Then. How about that?
It could actually happen, but since there's no fucking way we beat Northwestern, they're basically our Ohio State at this point. We haven't. We'd have to go to Tim Beckman to beat them.
You know the most likely result is you beat them by 20, and you don't see a second of it. But anyway,
don't care.
We talk about the bucket game. Purdue's going to a decent but not great bowl either way, and Indiana can't make a bowl game, so that's also just a rivalry game without a whole lot in the way of stakes. When we get to then Ohio State, Michigan is obvious because the winner wins the East and is in prime position to go to the playoff. That'd be a huge favorite in the conference title game.
Did we talk about the X?
What?
Did we talk about the X?
Yeah.
That's a big
where
one.
Where have you been? We ran through all the shit. I tried to get into it, and you brought up fucking Illinois again. So, but yeah, if Wisconsin wins, they win the West is basically what I said. And all Minnesota can do is prevent them from doing that. So in terms of stakes, they're kind of imbalanced there as well.
No, that's a pretty big motivator for Minnesota.
Big stakes in the game. And then you've got in Maryland and Rutgers, two teams that are at different points along the building arc where, like, if you're Greg Schiano and you get to a bowl in year two, and yeah, granted, the offense has been unwatchable most of the season, but still you find a way to six wins. You get the extra practices. Maybe you think about starting Gavin Wimsatt because you've been getting him involved and you'd have a whole extra month to work him in. That's a big thing. Now, if you're Mike Locksley, it's a little bit more of a need to make a bowl game here or fucking hot seat next year. Just like you haven't done anything since you've been hired. So a little bit of a different perspective for each team there. And I guess we'll see who the best. I mean, this feels like a situation where Maryland has a substantial talent edge on both sides of the ball, but Rutgers has a big coaching advantage. I wonder how that's going to work out. I don't really know.
And a loss here would be a very big indictment of, like, Mike Locksley. I'm not, you know, there's no way to sugarcoat it.
Sure.
They should win this game, and I kind of am not certain that they will.
I'm not certain that they will either, not by any means. Let me see here. So, and sure enough, the game is in Piscataway, and the line is Maryland giving 1.5. I'd have no idea how I'm going to pick this game when the time comes. What is it, tomorrow, for us to make our selections? I have no earthly idea.
I'm probably going to pick the Gers, but not with a whole lot of confidence.
Yeah, I suppose so. All right, so we beat around the bush long enough. It's time now to talk about the game.
The game. All right, so if you think I was doomerific about my own team, well, the other despair pill that I have is Ohio State just wins everything forever until there's a major, major scandal. And I don't see how that's going to stop here.
Probably not, but
walk me through the path to victory for Michigan. Here, this is the most entertaining thing we can do.
Sure.
Walk me through the path to victory for Michigan.
I will walk you through the path to victory. The path to victory for Michigan is they actually have the offensive line to run the ball against Ohio State. And they have enough weapons in the pass game to finish their scores with touchdowns and get the occasional long play on what is low-key kind of a vulnerable Buckeye secondary. It hasn't mattered often, but again, think back to the Purdue game. And granted, I get that the Buckeyes kind of took the foot off the gas a little bit there, but earlier in the season as well, this is a very young Buckeye secondary, and they're talented across the board, no question, but with an experienced quarterback with an offensive system that's been clicking. And especially with the way Michigan operates on offense, where they prefer kind of the longer, slower drives, they can cut down the number of possessions in this game. Because remember, we always used to talk about trestle ball as being a really weird strategy for Ohio State to run, you know, because we know from statistical analysis that the more talent you have, you should want more possessions because it gives your awesome talent more chances to do awesome stuff. Michigan, it almost feels like they've structured their offense this year around actually looking forward to this game. And we're not alone in this, but we've commented multiple times on, man, how are you ever going to beat Ohio State if you're not running a more balanced, wide open offense? Well, because you're approaching that game as saying, there is no way that we're keeping up with three first round draft picks at wide receiver. If we try to match them point for point, we need to shorten this game and put it in a spot that a turnover or a big special teams play at the right time gives us a lead. And now Ohio State's playing from behind, which they haven't had to do since Oregon. And they didn't handle that situation well. They couldn't come back from that game. And I know they're better now than they were then, but you wanted a path for how Ohio State loses game. That's how it goes. It's both simple, and it'll feel simple and obvious, but it's also, I think, the best answer, which is Michigan runs the ball. They run the ball, they hold on to the possession, and they keep Ohio State's offense off the field. I think they're good enough to do it.
And really, it's not that he's the only one to ever do this, but this is one of the most prominent games I've seen of this happening. You got to bird him.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Shorten the game and make it so that one big play on defense and special teams, especially special teams, could do it, could really be the difference. Look,
Michigan's got, first of all, Michigan has the better kicker. I think they probably have the better punter, but to be honest with you, I haven't seen much of Ohio State's punter. I don't think anybody has.
Yeah.
So who knows how that goes. But and then in terms of the return game, Michigan's got guys, AJ Henning, who can make an impact there as well. So yeah, that's really how they do it, though, is this game plan that a lot of us all year have been like, man, what are they doing? This is limiting their ceiling. It may very well have been designed for one specific opponent. It may have been a season-long campaign to get them ready for Ohio State. And they've got enough talent and have had enough of the breaks go their way in other games that they come in with only one loss. And yeah, I think that's how they would do it. I'm not saying it's especially likely, but look, the line here is only Ohio State minus eight, even though the game is in Ann Arbor. So that's the closest line they've had in quite a while. The most likely result, yeah, is Ohio State wins by three scores or more. But I don't think it's as unrealistic as a lot of people seem to think that Michigan keeps this game close.
Well, the question is, if they do keep it close and say it plays out a lot like 2016, and then we're talking about just losing by inches in an extremely contested game, how the hell does Jim Harbaugh ever come back from this?
Jim Harbaugh goes back into a shell for four more years, or is he just rendered catatonic?
The fact that he went through that the season after going through trouble with the snap is just like,
well, yeah. But here's the thing: even with the 2-win season last year, there hasn't been anything that bad for them since then. And the other thing is, even if they lose that game, depending on what happens in the conference title game, I believe they still got a really good shot at the Rose Bowl. Being who they are, they're going to have the advantage with bowl selection over even Michigan State, which is absolute bullshit, but also definitely going to happen. So I've made my peace with that. I'm over it. So that probably means a 10-win Michigan State gets to go to the friggin' Citrus Bowl. But anyway, I think Michigan is not able to get it done, but it wouldn't surprise, you know what I think the most likely result here is they keep it close enough to feel like they're making real progress against Ohio State. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. And the other thing I should mention, by the way, is that when CJ Stroud has struggled this season, which hasn't been often, it's been when the opponent has gotten pressure on him. Like this offensive line has quietly been incredible in pass pro, but they haven't seen a couple of bookends like Michigan has at the defensive end spots. I would be remiss not to mention that. Hutchinson and Ojabo are by far the best couple of defensive ends they have. And you'll think back, the closest comparison is that Penn State game. That's the defense closest to what Michigan has on the front line. And for a little while, Ohio State really struggled. Now, eventually,
but the difference being that Michigan can run the ball.
Yeah, they can run the ball. And so what that means, again, think back to the Penn State game. They kept it close for a while, but eventually, given enough opportunities, Ohio State's guys break the big plays. If they have fewer opportunities, that might not happen. And with Michigan having the ball, what you expect to be longer possessions, yeah, there's very much a game plan to victory. There, see, that wasn't so hard.
Yeah, it's certainly, it's there. But again, it does kind of require it requires limiting possessions and it requires a few big plays to break your way.
Yeah, but again, that's always how you win as an underdog in the big picture.
That's always how you win against Ohio State, because you are always an underdog against Ohio State, no matter who you are. Yeah, because
when we say you, we're not talking 20 fans of Georgia or Alabama, because I can't imagine any of them would listen to us.
Yeah.
Speaking of Georgia and Alabama and elsewhere, let's take a quick turn around the rest of the country. Thanksgiving, you have Egg Bowl, mandatory viewing after the piss and miss every year. You
obviously will never, ever top that, but...
You might see a worthy successor in that matchup.
It is still Lane Kiffin versus Mike Leach.
Yeah, for now, we'll see. You know, Lane Kiffin's name has come up in a lot of these other big jobs.
Yeah, that's the thing. What if on Wednesday, Lane Kiffin takes the Florida job?
Or if he takes it the day after this game, after winning, he wins, gets Ole Miss to the Peach Bowl or something, and then leaves. Yeah, that'd be pretty typical for how Ole Miss's fortunes have gone.
The Zombie Apple Cup, you'll have Jimmy Lake and Nick Rolovich, the coaches of Washington and Washington State, coached 2 years at those respective schools and never coached against each other because COVID canceled this last year and they both got fired before they could get to the end of the season this year.
Yeah, just preposterous. We mentioned earlier, if Texas loses to Kansas State and Kansas beats West Virginia, that means the Longhorns finish their final season in the Big 12 dead last in the conference, and then they move to the SEC.
A broken-ass locker room missing their best offensive player in Bijan Robinson.
Yeah, I'm definitely playing Deuce Vaughn, by the way, this week. That's why I can't go with that's why I can't play Evan Hull, because I'm playing Deuce Vaughn for sure. We also have the Sicko Super Bowl, and it's 1-10 UMass, which has fired their coach, at 1-10 New Mexico State. I think those are both independents at the moment, although
yes.
I believe New Mexico State managed to grab onto a log.
I believe right now they are independents.
Yeah, in the Group of Five realignment. But anyway, so that's 2 1-10 teams where one team has already fired their coach. And then, as always, this last week of the season, you have a ton of in-state rivalry matchups. So outside of your team's game, we would encourage channel surfing, honestly. Flip around, find something that interests you. There, it's always a little bit tough to measure how the emotions balance out and what each team is playing for. It's difficult to tell which games are actually going to end up being best. So keep an open mind.
Fresno State at San Jose State to determine who is the second best team in the state of California, right?
True. Behind the
second to San Diego State, yeah.
Still an outside shot for New Year's Six Bowl for San Diego State if Cincinnati loses this week and next.
With big time action in-state rivalries, you got Eastern at Central Michigan, you got Ohio at Bowling Green. What's the other one? Oh, Miami, Ohio at Kent State. Only big time stuff right here.
Yeah. And of course, if no other reason, tune into Toledo at Bowling Green, because Toledo has a missile pointed at Bowling Green State campus.
a literal missile.
I mean, it's not live, but at the Glass Bowl. And again, we may have to consider that as our next stop on the MAC tour. There is in the stadium, in the Glass Bowl, a rocket aimed towards Bowling Green Stadium as though waiting for that declaration of war.
We're going to have to wait until Ohio legalizes it, though, because I'm not going to the Glass Bowl and not smoking up. I'm not going to the Glass Bowl.
Given the state not bringing my own glass bowl. Right now, I would not take a puff and hold your breath.
South Florida at UCF only really has Sicko's potential, although I'm just so happy that the official name of the stadium is currently the Bounce House. Or as my semi-Yinzer wife would say, the bounce house.
Bounce house, downtown.
Not downtown, downtown Orlando. North Carolina, NC State, another one of those in-state rivalry games. Georgia at Georgia Tech.
We can't list every game between
pretty hopeless
in the same state. We will just list every
just
game.
Just ones that are interesting, though. I mean, that one is Sam Howell's last chance at making another ACC instant ASIC.
Man, I suppose so. I talk about a guy who fell off the face of the earth, right? Before the season, I don't remember if he got much high. Well, no, he didn't get much Heisman pub because ESPN wouldn't talk about anyone except DJ Uiagalelei, who might not even be the best quarterback in their matchup with South Carolina this week.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Sam Howell is that I picked Sam in week two in fantasy, and he made me howl.
I'd say we're here all week, but that is the end of the show, folks. Thanks for listening.
All right. Oh, shit. We went over a lot. All right.
Yeah, I know. Because there's no limit to your ability to talk about Illinois.
Absolutely not.
Your source for Big Ten Talk. It's Off Tackle Empire.
What do you think? Decent read?
Yes. I love the execution.
All right.
I think I like it. Did you read that at all before you went into it?
No.
I like it better that way. I think that's how we should do it from now on. Just blind read on that. Yes, I like that a lot.
very dollop. Oh, yeah. The one that I listened to. Oh, my God. I don't think I finished it, actually, because I think I listened to it while I was doing my run yesterday morning. Was the eugenics one?
Oh, yeah.
That's where I got the idea. When they said, if you saw our conversation in the random channel where they were like, I hope Roger's penis falls off too. Because I was thinking of that one, I was like, well, wait a second. If I put on my 1890s doctor thinking cap, wouldn't that just make him more productive and, you know, a healthier, happier, more productive member of society?
Yeah, man.
He is, after all, a fucking idiot.